Listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to miss the snow again. I hope.
No, we're not going to miss it at all.
What I mean is, perhaps it won't hit us.
Perhaps. Yeah, that's. I hear it might be passing us by.
Yeah.
But then they're saying something about ice. So.
Oh.
Between the two, I'll take the snow.
I'll take the snow. Yeah. Right.
So, Mom, are you ready for Christmas?
I'm never ready.
You're always ready. You start shopping 6 months ahead of time.
Well, I don't have all my cards done or anything, you know.
I know. I gave up on the card thing.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've lived so many different places that I hear from people, you know, that I knew back in the day. And so that's the only time I keep in touch.
Well, you keep in touch better than almost anyone I know. I mean, you communicate with friends from college and high school and California, where we lived when I was born, and Pennsylvania, where I grew up, and of course, all over Iowa, where you grew up. And
yeah, well, you know, that's a.
And the reason is you actually write letters.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Personal letters.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm not on the internet, so I don't have email. Believe it
One
or not, I'm
days.
Not on the internet, folks.
One of these days. Well, we have a couple of things before we get to our guest this week, a couple of announcements we want to make. One of our former guests, Emma Rainey, is sponsoring a Midwest Writers Workshop for Veterans at the University of Iowa, January 15th to 17th.
Great.
To help veterans give voice to their experiences, the University of Iowa Veterans Center and the UI Division of Continuing Education are co-sponsoring a free writing workshop, January 15th to 17th at the UI Distance Learning Center in downtown Iowa City. And you know, Rainey said one out of every five U.S. soldiers engaged in combat experiences post-traumatic stress syndrome or disorder, and anxiety syndrome who suffers may re-experience the trauma of war. And the workshop would help veterans learn how to tell their stories in compelling and creative ways and offer a catharsis for dealing with traumatic events.
You know, I'm surprised that all of our service people who engage in it, I don't have that difficulty. I mean, I can't imagine.
I know. Interested individuals can sign up. The workshop is free, but registration is required. You go to www.midwestvetswritingworkshop.com. And if
Sounds
you
great.
Don't remember that, I'm sure if you just Google something at all similar to that, you'll be able to find
That's
out.
That's great.
And
she's very talented, so it should be a really good workshop.
Oh, yeah. And you can also contact Emma if you're here in Fairfield at 641-919-2654 for more information.
All right.
That's great. Now, we have a really interesting guest today.
Yes, indeed.
I checked out her website, and it was quite entertaining. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about our guest?
Okay. She is one of, it's Janice Taylor, and she is one of the country's leading health and wellness coaches. a weight loss artist. This is different. Motivational speaker, author, creator of the popular e-letter Our Lady of Weight Loss and the Kick in the Tush Club and contributor to the Huffington Post, Today's Health and Wellness magazine,
BeliefNet.com.
She has been featured in the Oprah magazine, New York Times, Good Housekeeping, Family Circle, Chicago Sun-Times, LA Times, CNN.com, WebMD.com, Fitness and Health magazine, appeared on numerous radio and television programs, and we are going to have her on our program. How about that?
Welcome to Writer's Voices, Janice.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Where are you calling in from today?
New York City.
Uh-huh.
And if you talk like I'm from New York, I can.
Yeah, do that. I like that.
We'll figure it out just if you talk fast enough.
Yeah, true. Fast talking.
Yes. In fact, we had the world's fastest talking woman on our show
who was
also from New York City.
Really?
Yes.
And she was,
yes,
too.
She had won the Guinness Book of World Records as the fastest talking woman.
Oh, you know, you got to do with what you have.
That's right. Go with what you got. That's right.
Right.
Well, Janice, you have two books published, Our Lady of Weight Loss and All is Forgiven, Move On.
Yes, that's true.
Who is Our Lady of Weight Loss?
Our Lady of Weight Loss is the patron saint of permanent fat removal.
Sounds good to me.
Out there in Iowa would know that.
And how did you find, or how did you become acquainted with Our Lady of Weight Loss?
Well, she found me. She appeared to me in a very dark moment. I had gotten up one morning and found that I was fat. Just to be clear, I was born fat. I was the only baby in the hospital nursery that gained weight. I don't know if you know that, but babies traditionally lose a few ounces their first week.
Right.
But not me. An ominous sign. By the time I was 8 years old, I was 112 pounds.
Oh, my.
Ooh,
and
my gosh.
Yes, it's very sad. And then I just basically yo-yoed from that point going forward until I was quite the grown-up. And on this particular morning, I woke up particularly fat, and I rolled my thing out the door into a meeting, a Weight Watcher meeting. Mm-hmm. And in my darkest moment after I weighed in, and it was the highest number ever, and with tears in my eyes, I sat down to listen to the lecture. And, of course, I've done that program many a time. It's a good program, but you lose it, you find it. And I said, oh, God, here I am again. And tears came to my eyes, and I thought, I'm never going to be able to do this. And that's when Our Lady of Weight Loss entered the picture, because I heard a voice that I maintain to this day was outside of me, because I was way too mired in self-pity to hear anything positive. And the voice said, if you think you're never going to make it, you never will. That might not sound like a lot, and I think we all know that our actions follow our thoughts, but in that moment, it was an experience, and it really and truly felt like I had been hit over the head with a Zen celery stick, and it was like, wow. And I just thought, wow, I've defeated before I've even, you know.
Before you've begun.
You've begun.
Right.
And then Our Lady further said to me, you're an artist, make weight loss an art project. And in that moment, I went from the most depressed person in the country, easily, to the most excited. Because I had switched. It was really a switch that this wasn't going to be like all the other times. This time was different because this time I wasn't making it about a diet. I was making it about something fun.
Well, what is a weight loss artist?
A weight loss artist is someone who makes art about food instead of eating it and in the process loses weight.
Ah.
So in that moment of I'll be a weight loss artist, of course I didn't have the title yet, but I thought, okay, I'm going to turn this into an art project. In that moment of turning back to my attention back to the meeting, I heard one of the members talking about red peppers. And she said, they're juicy and delicious. And I said, oh, I said, juicy and delicious red peppers. I'll make sexy vegetable collages. And I'll make a collage every week. I'll cut and paste and sniff the Elmer's glue. And and worst case scenario, at the end of the year, I'll have an art show. And maybe I'll lose some weight, too. And I'll follow their plan. I'll follow a plan. I'll eat less. I'll get healthy. But I am not going to be obsessed about the number. Instead, I'm going to be obsessed about the art.
Mm. Now, red peppers are actually a good thing to eat if you're trying to lose weight.
They are. And so, great.
Yeah.
Eat red peppers, too. In fact, I did eat a lot of red peppers, raw red peppers and orange peppers and yellow peppers and any pepper that you green peppers. They are. It's a wonderful, it's a real food. It's healthy, nutritious, and yes. So I got double the inspiration. Eat red peppers and go and make a pretty picture about them.
Well, Janice...
Oh, done other kinds of art where, of course, that was about a pepper, but I've also sewn pieces of cake.
Sewn pieces of cake?
Yes. I took a piece of... I took a beautiful photo of a slice of cake, mm-hmm. and I transferred it onto silk. And I got my sewing machine on, and I sewed it so it was like a mini tiny pillow.
Oh.
And I had such a good time. I kept looking for pictures of food. And I'm telling you, it really changed how I was looking at food. I wasn't looking. It changed. I really believe it changed the wiring in my head that food wasn't. It wasn't about eating a cupcake. It was about seeing, is that a pretty one? Can I take a picture? Can I sew it onto something?
Wow.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to remove the fat?
To permanently remove the fat.
To permanently remove the fat.
I like that. It's like a truck pulled up and we hauled off the fat and they took it away forever. It took about a year to lose 50 pounds, which is about what it should be. It shouldn't really be it took about a year to lose 45 pounds and then another bunch of months to lose the last 50 or so. And that's what we should be aiming toward. In fact, I do a lot of weight loss coaching now and with people who are artists and non-artists, too, because this is really about your life, not about the fat. And the things I stress is to have five-pound goals. Mm-hmm. When I started, I said, I'll lose 5 pounds at a time, and if I find my waist, it'll be a great day.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
About 20 pounds into it, I found my waist, and then I said, all right, let me see if I can lose another 5 pounds. Let me see what happens. I didn't put that. If I started out and said, I need to lose 50 pounds, I have to, I think I would have been dead in the water pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I took every single thing that people tell you to do, and I threw it out the window and said, I'm starting a new way. So, because even in these plans, they tell you to have a goal weight.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes the first goal is 10%, but I really, really like the idea of 5 pounds. 5 pounds, and then you can sit there and say, okay, now you have a choice. Want to let go of another five? Great.
It's definitely easier to do things in chunks. And it's not just for weight loss, but a lot of things in life, if... people have lofty goals, which are great, but you look at the goals and you look where you are and it seems insurmountable.
Daunting.
Whereas if you just look at what needs to be done today.
I so totally agree, and it's kind of an interesting balance, and I work with people and talk about it in both the books, is about how do you find a balance where you're moving towards something, you have a big picture, you have a vision, and then you want to take the vision and you want to chunk it down into a planning stages and the details, and then what do I need to do today exactly, so that you hold the vision in front of you, but you do what you need to do today, so it's not overwhelming. In fact, people come to me, and I think the two biggest things in weight loss is that they feel overwhelmed and under-motivated.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that that's really, you don't want overwhelmed, small steps, consistent. Consistency is really what matters. And motivation, how do you stay motivated? I think one of the things, there's many ways, one of the things is that that you really do want to have a vision of where you're going, and you want to again, what is that vision? What is weight? What is losing weight going to give you that you would not otherwise have?
Mm.
That's a really important question.
Yeah.
In fact, whoever's listening, get a pad and paper and write that down and send me an email and tell me. Because what will losing weight give you that you would not otherwise have? Because otherwise you're going to lose it and you're going to find it. It's got to be any change we make. And you're right, it's not just about weight loss. This is about any change at all. Any change that we make, we need to be looking at something that is taking us someplace that we really want to go. You need to be clear about what is this going to give you that you would not otherwise have.
Well, what is your biggest secret for not finding the weight after you lose it?
Well, I have many secrets. I'll tell you all of them.
Okay.
Or some of them, because the rest are in the books.
Okay.
One of them is language. Is that the way I speak about it is the way I sort of think about it. And I'm really, that's just from the way you said that to me right now, is that it's really, not, for me, it's not about weight loss. For me, this is really, weight loss is, it's permanent fat removal, and it's about my life, and it's about the bigger picture. So it's, again, it's what is this, how is this going to add to my life? I used weight loss as a vehicle for reinvention and transformation.
Mm, because it's one that a lot of people focus on.
Well, everybody wants to lose weight. Well, not everybody.
Not everybody.
But everybody wants to.
A lot of people, let's put it
that
way.
But again, it's only one small part of your life.
Right.
So how does your weight affect your relationships? How do your relationships affect your weight?
That's very interesting because, you know, I was not born fat. I was born really skinny. and I was really skinny growing up to where people made fun of me all the time. And I was very self-conscious about being so skinny. Now, after I had children, I gained weight and then I lost it. And then so I've gone back and forth. But I've never been like really unhappy with my body in either case. So I'm not all that motivated. But the thing is, one thing that I did that I personally experienced is that I tended to weigh more when I was happier.
That's interesting.
The happiness came first, though. I mean, I'd get happy and then I'd weigh more. And then when I was less content with my life, I'd want to lose weight.
Well, what does that say to you about what weight means to you?
I think to a large extent, and this is coming from somebody who it hasn't really, it's all, the weight is more about appearance than health, because I've never been heavy enough for it to be a health problem. But that in some sense being, I want to be thinner because of how other people look at me rather than how I look at myself.
So, interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're all feeling so judged. And that's not a good reason.
Yes,
exactly. But you really want to do it for you. You want to do it. I think the big prize is at the end of the day. Two things. In the beginning of the day when I get dressed, I look in the mirror. I still don't know who I am.
Who is that?
I'm like,
who is
holy cow, there's a space between my thighs. I was on doing a conference call a bunch of really serious people, and the question was like, what's your greatest accomplishment? And, oh my God, their accomplishments were so big. And they got to me and I said, the space between my thighs. I can't take this too seriously for too long. I think that, you know, when you're less content, you're weightless. I don't know, maybe you thought if you weighed less, you'd be happier, and then you got happy. I would bet it was connected in some way.
Well,
it's always many, many things.
Yeah.
With some people, it'd be the opposite.
It was still connected in some way to happiness.
Yeah. I think part of it is that, in terms of relationships, when I'm in a relationship where I feel really good, then I'm not as concerned about how I look because I don't need to attract somebody.
Well, you know, oddly enough, and there's my biggest fan who says the worst things, but she is my biggest fan. She'd tell you, you know, when you got married twice, and both times when you met them, when you were fat.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So, I don't know that being thin is the, it didn't seem to get in my way either time.
Well, see, in our culture, in this culture, being thin is the ultimate. The
I know, and it's really not. It is and it's not all at the same time.
Yeah. It's not necessarily healthy to be very thin. You know, of course, it's not healthy to be overweight either.
Right.
But,
that was the other thing. I've had a couple of like unusual health situations in my life. One was a bone tumor, and one was something else. But in both cases, they happened when I was at my thinnest.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that's another reason it's not a good association with
you. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people have bad associations with being heavy.
And
it's a story around it.
Yeah.
That you take in, and on some level you probably believe that being thin leads to these kinds of things.
Well, I think in a way that it did, because I was not taking care of myself as well. I was so concerned about being thin.
Yeah, again, it's a balance.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to say, if people who are happy the way they are, that they don't need to lose weight. And if one more mother calls me and tells me about her fat kid, I'm going to scream.
Oh.
Because that's the worst. Leave your kids alone. You know, set a good example. Cook, eat healthfully.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Don't make them feel badly about themselves. They already know. They already are. The culture's done a job. You don't need to add to it.
Absolutely.
It is a funny culture, isn't it?
Yeah,
and you know what I find? You said about, you know, why does someone want to lose weight? And they say, when I ask this question to people, the first thing that they're going to say is their health. And yet that won't carry you the whole way.
No.
It does. I really do think that people, it's more about how you look in your jeans.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing if that's going to get you there.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you tell the truth about what's motivating you, because mm-hmm. the pressure out there, again, around your health, it's true. It's not healthy to be really overweight.
Right.
Well, you have,
right.
And, but is, and is that going to be enough? I was speaking to a client this morning who said, actually, she wishes it was enough, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So, she it's part of it. She wants to be healthy. She knows she's headed in a really bad direction, and it's scary, but it's not enough. So I asked her a couple of questions about deeper conversation, and we decided that when she loses the next bunch of weight, she has a goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
After I told you only lose 5 pounds.
But some people might have a different...
There, we're going accessory shopping.
Ah.
She can start to feel better about herself and build a new identity.
Well, when you have...
We build a new identity. Sometimes we do it through the way we look, how we dress.
And when you have, you know, if you have a 5-pound goal and then another 5-pound goal, it's you do it partially so that you can feel a sense of accomplishment and success and reward yourself, but not with the big piece of cake.
Oh, come on.
I had a bad day. I deserve cake. No. You deserve. You deserve love. You deserve comfort, not from cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, some of us don't have anybody there to comfort us.
It's hard.
It is hard.
Yeah.
Well, Janice, what made you decide to write a book?
Well, I had all this artwork that I'd made, and I had this art. So now I'd lost weight, right? And I had all this artwork, and I took some of the art and I made it into Last Supper ware. I made plates called Last Supper ware. Don't you love that? They were all Our Lady and her sexy vegetables on these beautiful plates, and I had this art show. And people came up to me and they were asking me questions about my art. And I've been in art shows before, you know, small things. Not like I was making my living making art. And people say, well, you know, what's your medium? How do you do it? And I'd say, oh, I do collage and assemblage. And they'd say, that's nice, yawn, yawn, and they'd walk away. So this time they said, oh, tell us about your art. And I said, well, this is art, it's weight loss art. I'm a weight loss artist and started on my weight loss journey from Our Lady of Weight Loss as the patron saint to permanent fat removal, and she inspired me to make these pieces of art. Well, oh my God, I sucked the old air out of the universe. Everybody was so excited with 8 million questions.
I bet.
Yeah, because it made it something, it took the pain away. They were like, this is fun, this is interesting, how do you do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, I'm going to put a website up. And I'm going to show people my art. And it kind of came from that, because I got so much attention about the weight loss art and the website, ourladyofweightloss.com, that people, I said, you know what, I said, I've got to spread the word. I've got to share my message because it's a different message than everyone else's.
Yeah.
So the message is this is an opportunity for creativity and fun. This isn't a life sentence. This isn't this awful punishment, which most people think this is this awful punishment.
Well, it's about depriving yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's about depriving yourself. I think it's about giving yourself everything that you ever wanted.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So the first book was titled Our Lady of Weight Loss, and when was that published?
In 2006.
And how did you go about getting it published?
Well, I kind of serendipitously... I had the website up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Backtrack a little bit. And I had the website up, and I decided to make postcards to announce the website. And I was working in an office in New York City that had a high-profile list of people, and I was working on a charity event. And while I was addressing envelopes for the charity event, I said, oh, I'll take all the women from this list and send them postcards for Our Lady of Weight Loss to announce my website.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and these people don't know me, and it'll be, I wonder if anybody will send me an email and say, I like your website, or maybe somebody will buy a piece of weight loss art. That would be really cool. Or maybe somebody will pay attention to me, because God knows, I wish somebody would pay attention to me. So I had 1,000 postcards printed. I sent out 48, and I knew it, but I wasn't really thinking about it. One of them was a publisher. And she's out of the 48 cards, I got one response, which is basically your one response for, you know, they say the percentage of mailing, you get 1%.
Right. So.
And she said, I'm a publisher. Have you ever been interested in, would you be interested in writing a book? And ultimately, it didn't work out with that publisher, but once I had interest in it, it was relatively easy then.
Wow. So had you already started writing the book before that, or did that motivate you to write the book?
No, it's really weird. I had done the artist way. So mm-hmm. This is all feels very much for me like divine intervention, because I serendipitously send out cards, and I get a response to them from a publisher. And so in 1999, 10 years ago, I was doing The Artist's Way, you know, Julia Cameron's book.
Right.
By the way, Julia Cameron, I told her this, and she gave me a blurb for my book.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, the best makeovers begin from the inside out. Positive change comes from positive actions. Our Lady of Weight Loss links laughter to self-worth. That's exactly right.
That's wonderful.
Julia. But anyway, I had done The Artist pages. When I was heavy, you know, The Artist's Way, you just write every morning, you...
Right.
Empty your mind. You start journaling. And I did that. And the first page I wrote, I said, someday I'm going to write a book. I don't know what it's about, but someday I'm going to write a book. And someday I'm going to do this. That. With not knowing what it would be about. So I had thought about writing a book, but I wasn't a writer. I don't even know why I wrote that down.
It wasn't like you had been, since you were a kid, thinking you'd be a writer?
No, I don't know.
And what were you actually doing as a career?
No,
up till that point.
No, I had no idea.
I mean, what was your career before you became a writer?
Well, I worked in at CBS, the television.
Tell us about that
corporation. I worked there in government relations, and I was a high-end executive assistant there, and.
So what do you actually do in government relations?
I wanted to say it was a fascinating job, because one of the things that I actually did was the vice president came for lunch, and I was in charge of the lunch.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and the bomb squad dogs came. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Put in a phone in case there's a red alert. I'm telling you, it's crazy. I mean, so it was a very interesting job in many ways, but the truth of it was, you know, I was in an office, and I should never be in an office, because I should never be someplace I have to be. And to entertain myself and to also sort of fulfill this creative side, I made and sold jewelry from my desk.
What'd your boss think of that?
He liked it.
This is
the funny part. He was a non-corporate corporate guy.
Ah, okay.
The penis of it. Okay. But he was notoriously late for meetings. So anytime there was a meeting that he was late for, whoever came to see him, I would say, so, if it was a woman, I'd say, I love that blouse. Oh, look at the earrings I have. And they get so involved in shopping. They didn't care if he was late.
Oh, you are devious.
If a man, I'd say, well, what are you getting your wife for her birthday? Do you need to do some shopping while you're here? And I've known most of these people for quite a number of years, so I had built up clientele. Plus, I had a monopoly because nobody else was selling jewelry at the office.
Probably not.
So if people got, at one point there was like a line at my desk because if people got, you know, you're at work and who wants to be at work? You want a break from the day and they'd say, let's go shopping and they'd take the elevator up. Or I tried to be discreet about it.
Yeah, well, that was kind of blowing your cover there, wasn't it?
What's that?
That was kind of blowing your cover when they're standing in line.
I know. And because we were at CBS, I had, I'll loan some of the jewelry to the soap opera, The Guiding Light.
Oh, really?
And at the end of the show, they'd say, jewelry provided by Janice.
Oh, how cool.
It was very cool. So that's how I entertain myself. But when push came to shove at the end of the day, being in an office and working there, or from there I moved on to another firm and did other things, but it was never really my passion. Even though it was from the outside line, it looked like, hey, this is really pretty great. I really wanted to do something that was where I was creating something, my own life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're back to you. This publisher contacts you. Are you interested in writing a book? What was the next step?
I laid on the floor and screamed.
Was that in delight?
I was at an event, and I came home, and I put the computer on, and I read my emails. I could even tell you the date when it was, and I literally lay down on the floor and screamed to my husband, the trajectory of my life has just changed, and it became the biggest carrot. Truly, all serious, you know, all kidding aside here, the fact that somebody, a high-profile publisher, had recognized me gave me the courage to move forward. And it said, I really do have something here. You know, I had the first signs of it at that art show, or even at you know, telling people about it. But
right.
Now this was confirmation. And it became a calculated risk, because at that point I didn't have an agent. And I didn't have a publisher because in the end I went to meet with her, but it didn't work out. But the carrot became so big that I had to go for it.
And the nice thing about carrots is you can eat all you want and not gain weight.
Until you turn orange or until you jog, I found out. Because I do want to talk about that. So I did, because I have eaten carrots until I've turned orange and until my jaw hurt.
Oh.
No, sorry. I'll tell you why in a minute. But,
okay.
So, what's interesting about that is that, you know, it was a combination of inspiration and desperation. I was so inspired to move forward, and I had to do this. And I also felt that if I didn't do it, it was sort of, I would regret it for the rest of my life.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and that I had to take that leap of faith and go after my dream. There was enough evidence that there was something there and it was worth working on.
Okay, you weren't a writer, and you set out to write a book. Where do you start?
You freak out.
And then what?
You freak out. You quit your job because you're going to write a book, and that was like the happiest day of my life. It was like the shackles of my karmic shackles had been cut off, and then you... The day after, though, I sat there and I was like, oh my God, I quit my job. I have no money coming in. I don't know how to write a book. You know what you do? You sit down and you write it.
How you do just about anything, isn't it?
What's that?
That's pretty much how you do anything in life.
You just do it.
That's right.
Until it works. You don't give up.
Yeah, one bird at a time.
Yep. Yes, one bird at a time. I read that.
Yeah.
I read all the books.
So how long did it take you to finish Our Lady of Weight Loss?
I guess it took about, it took a lot of freak-out time.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of really bad drafts. And not even just like, how do you I think the hardest thing about writing a book is to know how you're going to organize it.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you could have done, there's a thousand different ways that you could have structured this book. So tell us a little bit about what you ended up with.
Well, here's how I ended up. So I freaked out, man. Let me tell you, the anxiety level that I had to push through and fear that I was going to have to go back to work and I would have failed because I couldn't. I only had a certain amount of money to go through. And if I went through that money, I was going to have to go back to work. And you know what I got down to before I got the book deal?
$100?
$500. Which, I don't know about where you live, but here, that's not your rent.
No, that's pretty tight.
Yeah. So what I did was what was the question?
How the book
became? Oh, the organized
how you structured it. How you organized it?
Well, I was freaking out. See, I went back into freak out mode and it wiped out where I was going. To calm myself down, I decided that I would write a newsletter, a weekly newsletter called The Kick and the Tush Club, and that would give me some. It would give me some place to practice writing and some structure to my week because then I knew I had to finish something every week to send it out. And
good plan.
Hmm?
That's a good plan.
It was a good plan. And and as I began, that began to unfold, I realized that that was the book. That it had given me, not exactly, but that was pretty much the structure. That it was about giving people a kick in the tush, that it was one step at a time, that it was bits and pieces of information. Just like you want to lose 5 pounds at a time, here's 5 pounds worth of information at a time. Mm. And in between, let's have a little laugh. Let's do something funny here. In the book, in the newsletter, people started to write into me and send me their weighty confessions. They would confess their dietary transgressions.
Uh-huh. You became the confessor.
Yes, well, Our Lady was, not me. And so that became part of the book. Confessions. So Our Lady of Weight Loss is so relatable. People love it because it's filled with this amazing, colorful, beautiful collages, if I say so myself, that I made. They're so heartfelt. Oh my God, this is like giving birth times 20. Mm-hmm. And then putting in all the letters to Our Lady in it, and the weighty confessions are from real people who were writing me.
Well,
so it's very you see yourself in this book, and I think it's really great. You get to see yourself, and you can laugh too. Laugh at yourself is pretty powerful stuff.
Right, and then the reader can say when he or she comes across a certain one, that could be me. That's me. I could have written that.
Great.
That's the kind of book I like.
Yeah. Thank you.
So it grew out of the website, and did most of the marketing? Did you do it through the website, or how? I mean, you got an awful lot of attention for this book. How did that happen?
Well, I have to say it was part of my plan.
Good.
Well, I said, when I quit my job, they said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to get famous, and then I'm going to be, I'm a weight loss artist. First I'll get famous, and then I'll write a book. I said, because I say famous in quotes, but if people don't know who you are, you could be the best and brightest and have the most revolutionary information for them, and they can't find it.
Right.
So I put my story together, and it really started with the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
I sent the newsletter to, like, my friends and family and a couple of coworkers, and they passed it on.
Wow.
Pretty soon I had 2,500 people on my mailing list.
Oh, wow.
So between that and my story, I was able to just tell people at Good Housekeeping and Family Circle, hey, I'm here and listen to what I'm doing. And it's such a unique weight loss story that they were interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
All rolling on that.
I'm sure, because every issue of these magazines on the cover, there is a weight loss thing of some kind.
Okay, isn't it amazing that they haven't run out?
Yeah, you know, there's a picture of some scrumptious food, and then there's a weight loss thing.
Oh, and I really want to write about that because it really peeves me off.
Yeah, yeah, it does
it's like
me too.
The country is telling everybody you're obese and you need to lose weight. Can we get political for a couple minutes here?
Sure, but actually before we do that, I realized I have not reminded our listeners that you're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Janice Taylor, author of Our Lady of Weight Loss and All Is Forgiven, Move On. Those are two books. Okay, so let's get political now, Janice.
Well, it's just the magazines for one thing, but the government, the doctors, the people, everybody's telling us that we really need to lose weight, that it's an epidemic, and that it's for your health, and you're costing the country health dollars, billions of health dollars, blah blah blah. And in the meantime, we're not getting the support that we deserve. We're not getting it. If a magazine is telling you on one page to here's your diet of the day, and on the next page here's how you make a 7-layer chocolate cake.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
is not fair.
No, it is not.
No. Thank you.
You're right. Absolutely.
How do you tell people who are seriously addicted to chocolate cake, here, look at this. Sorry, you can't have any. And you're bad because you're costing us a lot of money.
Wow. Yeah, well, this health bill thing has brought that to mind, you know, tremendously, because so many people, don't take care of themselves and they do cost a lot of money. And it's
Well, it does, but also look at the food industry.
Oh yeah,
for profit industry.
Oh yeah,
and they are, and the industry is lacing the foods that they make with layers of salt, fat, and sugar that makes it addictive.
Oh, and the whole corn syrup thing is that's a whole nother thing. How there's corn syrup in everything.
In everything.
Yeah.
So they'll tell you that the corn syrup's not bad for you, but when corn syrup is in everything, you have it's in baby crackers, for God's sake.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I went in the supermarket one day reading I read the labels like crazy anyway, because it's not even, it's just, I can't believe it. And it's like, how can you keep putting sugar in everything and then be mad at people when they're addicted to it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You go on an airplane. And these are big corporations. And I think that since we're run by corporations anyway, let's be real about this. Why right. don't the corporate, you know, don't tell us that we, and that, why don't you give us some fresh fruit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A bag of dripping in fat something or other.
Yeah, right. No kidding.
So you're just not making this, it's just like they talk out of both sides of their mouth, and it drives me crazy.
And there is some progress. Things are moving, like schools used to, schools used to be awful, and there has been some movement towards more fresh fruits and vegetables and taking the soda machines out and things like that.
There's not enough movement.
But it was awful. Well, Janice, I'm very curious to hear. I'd like to hear little bits from each of your books. Could you read something from Our Lady of Weight Loss?
Yes. Well, why don't I pull out my book here, and why don't I find you a juicy confession?
Ooh,
sounds good.
I've got a couple of them. I can act them out if you like.
Okay.
This is Janice Taylor reading from Our Lady of Weight Loss.
Yes, this is Janice Taylor reading a weighty confession from people who wrote to me. I did not make this up. This is what you have confessed to me. Dear Our Lady of Weight Loss, forgive me, for I have sinned. I woke up in the middle of the night and headed straight to the kitchen. The refrigerator was just about bare with the exception of a condiment or two. I was crazed and desperate. I ate 2 frozen hot dogs, so I didn't bother to cook them.
Oh.
In counseling. And Our Lady says, all is forgiven, move on.
Mm.
Well, it sounded funny when I wrote it.
It is funny, but it's also pathetic.
Well.
It's pretty sad, yeah.
It's true. I mean, what do we do? I remember being in a museum, and my husband was talking to me, and somebody walked by with a tray with cupcakes on it, and it was like a movie. I didn't hear a word he said after that.
You were just watching the cupcakes.
Yeah. Okay, here's one.
Okay.
Forgive me, for I have sinned. I fear that I have sunk down to a new all-time weighing low. I was going to my group meeting, wherein we weigh in, and then to ensure the lowest possible numbers, I painstakingly assembled the appropriate weigh-in outfit. I rolled up all my shorts, tops, bras, and panties, and one by one weighed them on my food scale. No thong underwear weighs an entire 1 ounce in full bikinis. You know, how crazy are we about the scale?
Oh, yes.
In the book All Is Forgiven, Move On, I talk about the scale and about what the scale really measures.
Can you read some of that to us?
I'm going to. I'm looking for it while you guess.
What the scale really meant. Well, I don't know, but I know that there was a period in my life when I was pretty focused on getting and staying thin, and I would only weigh myself first thing in the morning after I'd gone to the bathroom, but before I washed my hair, because wet hair weighed more than dry hair.
Right.
But after I shaved, because, you know, that got rid of that hair.
I am agreeing. I'm right there with you, agreeing with you.
Yep, and I didn't want to put, and I hadn't put my contacts in, and you can't wear your glasses because they weigh something, so I couldn't actually see the scale anyway.
That would be me, yeah. How about brushing your teeth? You want that toothpaste?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, after you brush your teeth, because you got rid of all that scum on your teeth.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I agree with you. And I want to know who in their right mind would weigh themselves any other time. Even now, I wouldn't weigh myself after I ate anything.
Absolutely not, no.
Oh, I mean, let's not. In fact, I went to the doctor, and he had, in the winter, I walked in, and on the way to, you know, to the exam room, he had his scale in the hallway, and he says, "Oh, before we go in, just jump up on this, I can weigh you." And I said, "Are you out of your mind? I've got my coat and boots on. It's winter. You think I'm holding a bag? Are you nuts? No way."
I know. That's the problem with getting weighed at the doctor. You can't get naked.
Well, you can.
Well,
then you can't walk out in the hallway.
Lots of problems. Okay, this is the step number 27, and All Is Forgiven, Move On. This is Janice Taylor, weight loss artist and your weight loss coach, reading from All Is Forgiven, Move On, Our Lady of Weight Loss's 101 Fat-Burning Steps on Your Journey to Svelte-Sul. And what does the scale really measure? My friend Maggie told me that one of two things happen when she gets on the scale. If she's lost weight, she says, "Yay!" and she eats. If she gains weight, she says, "Why bother?" and she eats. Clearly, Maggie should not weigh herself daily, perhaps not even weekly. Do you know what the scale really measures, scientifically, that is? Mm. Every object in the universe with mass attracts every other object with mass, some more massive than others. Therefore, there is a pull, a force, an attraction, even better, between you and the Earth. Your bathroom scale measures that force of attraction, and that force is called your weight. If you look at it in those terms, it takes the emphasis off fat and puts it on gravitational pull.
Oh, I like that.
Scientific data that I could find does it state that the scale measures hideous fat. It is only a number, and I realized that it didn't have to be in a twist over the attraction between the Earth and me. After all, I am happy to be considered attractive.
Uh-huh.
So let's promise here and now that we're not going to get fixated on the numbers. The turtle wins this race, and numbers fluctuate with the wind. Seriously, even the weather can make you retain water. Nevertheless, statistics show that people who weigh themselves regularly not only lose weight faster, but keep it off. How often should we weigh ourselves? If you are like me, the kind of person who allows the numbers on the scale to dictate the mood of the day, then only weigh yourself once a week and on a day when no one is depending upon you in a big way. Or do not dispense life advice or operate heavy equipment on weigh a day.
Good advice.
Yes, and remember, only weigh yourself first thing in the morning after you relieve yourself, before coffee, and naked, of course. Every ounce counts.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Goodness sake, find the right spot. Tile floors often offer varied readings depending on the dip of the tile. Take advantage of that dip. And leave your scale there.
Oh, gosh.
Oh. Now, in All is Forgive and Move On, it's now CellTalk Scale. We have a new definition for the scale. Device that measures the Earth's attraction to us, unlike ancient times when the scale was used as a torture device. No longer about rejection, it is about acceptance and balance.
Mm.
And your new point of view is the scale does not measure my self-worth, but rather the attraction the Earth has to me.
Mm. I like that.
Yeah, that's like a good one.
And I'll tell you why, if I don't mind. As my grandmother says, don't break your arm patting yourself on the back, kid. I mean, I think that what makes this really and truly wonderful is that, yes, you have to weigh yourself, but no, you don't have to be crazy, and you can laugh about it. So both books are really that blend of useful information, things that you want to think about, things that are written so that you will think about them, and at the same time, that make you laugh.
Now, Janice, where are your books available?
They are available all over the place. You can go to, Amazon.com or to your local bookstore, even better.
We have two
great
ones.
Or you can go to my website, OurLadyOfWeightLoss.com.
Great.
Everything is linked there, including my e-programs and one-on-one coaching and where my workshops are being held.
And are you still doing the newsletter?
I do the Kick in the Tush almost every Monday except for holidays. I send out something. I've been doing it now, it's six, seven years now, and I'm amazed that I still have something to talk about. I make a new piece of weight loss art every week. So
really?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, where do you put them all?
Yeah,
do you sell the weight loss art?
Some that I've turned into greeting cards, and I am thinking about taking the best ones and having them. They will be available soon in print.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay. Because it's a wonderful anchor.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to look at the art, put it in front of you, and say, "Okay, this is about life. This is about having fun. It's a colorful adventure I'm on, not a punishment."
So, do you have another book in mind that you might?
I have many books in mind. I have a project I'm working on now. I'm not ready to disclose all of it to you.
Okay.
But that I'm diligently working on. But what I do have coming up very soon in January, an e-program, and it'll be up on my website in a couple of days, is the 21-day cure. Blow the fat cells out of your mind.
Hey, that sounds very interesting.
Well, that's where the fat cells are, everyone. It's in your mind. What do you really need you really need to change your point of view and how you view this and have a good time with it, and learn about yourself. Otherwise, you can lose it, but you'll find it. We don't want to, but there's nothing more depressing than losing a large amount of weight and gaining it back.
Yeah.
Now, Janice, when you're working on a book, how do you stay motivated to finish it?
Well, I get up about 5 o'clock in the morning because that's my that's really my most creative time.
Okay.
I just write every day from 5 o'clock, and I start for a couple of hours until I have clients that I work with,
mm-hmm.
Coaching clients, but that's my most creative time in the morning. And so I just get up and I do it. Some days, it's very interesting because some days it just flows, and some days it's like I'm banging my head up against the wall and it's bleeding.
Mm.
But every day I just do it because I have faith that it'll all come together in the end.
Do you work with an editor during the writing process, or just do you do it all yourself and then send it to the editor?
Do it all myself, and at the end I send it to the editor.
Do you have any like a writer's group or family or friends that you bounce things off of in the
meantime?
Well,
the first book I tortured my niece and my husband with. And I mean that because you can imagine, since I really had no idea what I was doing. my husband yells and he says, "You've been writing stuff for years," but not really, you know. I was doing some writing at work. That business writing is a very different thing. I really just do it now. And I think the real key to it is doing it and putting it away and then coming back to it, and then you can really edit it and have it different. Sometimes I read it and I say, "Who wrote that? Wow, that was good."
Yeah, where did this come from?
Yeah, who wrote that? Oh my God.
Well, in our
last... I could lose 50 pounds and keep it off, anybody can. And if I can write a book, anybody can.
Well, Janice, what are your Christmas dinner plans?
Well, you mean what am I eating or how am I handling?
Both.
So I like to tell people, aside from the food, I have a little bit of everything. I keep a tab on how much I weigh, and if I gain 3 pounds, then I go back into sort of more of a fundamentalist mode of I really am more strict about it, and I don't care if it's Christmas Day or not. That, you know, but one meal does not a fat person make. It.
Yeah,
you know? That is true.
But what I do really concentrate more on is manage your holiday expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, you know, get very down and out and upset with family more than friends, because your family, no one in my family has written the script that I have written for them.
Oh.
Never say what I want them to say.
Well, you know, people don't always put the clothes on that we lay out for them.
That's a beautiful way. I love that. They don't. And so I go into Christmas to holidays saying, I just want to remember that. And grateful. One day my mother and my daughter were really having, they fight with each other. It's a beautiful thing. I don't fight with my daughter. I don't fight with my mother. But the two of them have these little things that they do with each other. And I was like, isn't it beautiful? What a beautiful family. Isn't it? Because that's what family does.
Yeah.
I said, oh, there's a little drama today. Yeah, that's what we do here. Okay. And we withstand it. We still love each other.
Well, Janice, we are out of time. And I want to thank you so much for being on Writers' Voices. And before
it's been
we
such
say
a pleasure.
Goodbye, could you give us your website address one more time?
Our Lady of Weight Loss. Our Lady of Weight Loss.com.
Great. Thank you. And
thank you, one and all.
That was great.
And it was a pleasure meeting you.
Yes, thank you.
Indeed it was.
And I just have one more thing I want to mention before we close, and that is that there is a film script contest, part of the February Art Walk Film Festival. And you can tackle, the theme of it is Towards the Light, Presence of Place. Two winning scripts will get produced during a production workshop with experienced directors, cast, and crew. The scripts have to be submitted by December 31st, but this is a short film, so even if you haven't started, you might have time. Check out the fairfieldartwalk.org for more information, and you submit scripts to scriptentry@fairfieldartwalk.org. So you have till December 31st to write a script. And, Mom, do you have some final words
for us? Oh, I do. I think this fits. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. That's from Emily Dickinson.
Mm-hmm. See you next week on Writers' Voices. It will be Christmas Day, and we'll have a very special Christmas show for you. And now stay tuned for James Moore and Planet Earthwhile.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and WritersVoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM. broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.